Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Jessica Hergert. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Yelena Y. Janjigian, MD, a medical oncologist at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, to discuss the FDA approval of nivolumab plus chemotherapy for the frontline treatment of patients with advanced or metastatic gastric cancer, gastroesophageal junction cancer, and esophageal adenocarcinoma. On April 16, 2021, the FDA approved nivolumab to be combined with select types of chemotherapy for the frontline treatment of patients with advanced or metastatic gastric cancer, GEJ cancer, and esophageal adenocarcinoma. Data from the Phase 3 CheckMate 649 trial, which served as the basis for the approval, showed that nivolumab plus leucovorin, 5-fluorouracil, and oxaliplatin, or capecitabine and oxaliplatin, resulted in a significant improvement in survival in treatment-naive patients with PD-L1-positive advanced gastric cancer, GEJ cancer, and esophageal adenocarcinoma versus chemotherapy alone. At a minimum follow-up of 12 months, the median overall survival with nivolumab plus chemotherapy was 14.4 months versus 11.1 months with chemotherapy alone in patients with a PD-L1 combined positive score of 5 or greater. This translated to a 29% reduction in the risk of death with the nivolumab combination. Moreover, nivolumab plus chemotherapy resulted in a 32% reduction in the risk of disease progression or death versus chemotherapy alone. The CheckMate 649 trial enrolled 1,581 patients who were randomized 1-to-1 to receive nivolumab at a dose of 360 mg in combination with CAPOX, given every 3 weeks, or nivolumab at a dose of 240 mg with FOLFOX, given every 2 weeks, versus CAPOX or FOLFOX alone. 60% of patients had a PD-L1 CPS of 5 or greater. The median overall survival in the combination arm was 14 months in patients with PD-L1 CPS of 1 or greater versus 11.3 months in the chemotherapy alone arm. Additionally, the median overall survival with the combination versus chemotherapy alone was 13.8 months versus 11.6 months, respectively, among all patients who underwent randomization. The most common adverse effects with nivolumab plus chemotherapy included peripheral neuropathy, nausea, fatigue, diarrhea, vomiting, decreased appetite, abdominal pain, constipation, and musculoskeletal pain. The immunotherapy agent can also cause immune-mediated effects like pneumonitis, colitis, and hepatitis, as well as endocrinopathies and nephritis. In our exclusive interview, Janjigian discussed the FDA approval of nivolumab plus chemotherapy in advanced or metastatic gastric cancer, GEJ cancer, and esophageal adenocarcinoma, key findings from the pivotal CheckMate 649 trial, and future directions with immunotherapy in the field. What significance does the FDA approval of frontline nivolumab plus chemotherapy have for the treatment of patients with advanced metastatic gastric, GEJ, and esophageal adenocarcinoma? Could you shed light on the findings from the CheckMate 649 trial, which led to the FDA regulatory decision?
So CheckMate 649 was a first-line study that compared standard of care chemotherapy to chemotherapy plus nivolumab combination. And it's an important study because it's the first study in many years and over a decade that led to FDA approval of a targeted agent in the first line setting. And so the FDA approval came irrespective of PD-L1 status. And this was based on the data that we presented and were able to demonstrate. So what's unique about CheckMate 649 is that it's a study that focuses on adenocarcinoma patients and including patients both with esophageal, gastroesophageal junction, and stomach cancer. And this was an important distinction because for our Western population of patients, adenocarcinoma patients with esophageal and GE junction cancer, this is an exciting opportunity and an unmet need for an approval of an immune checkpoint blockade agent in first-line setting. What's unique about this study also is that patients were enrolled irrespective of PD-L1 status in CheckMate 649. And this was a large study, one of the largest done to date, where close to 800, so 780 patients were treated per arm. So this was a nice, robust data set that allowed us to really demonstrate a survival benefit for our immunotherapy in first-line setting. And the pre-specified analysis was done both in all-comer population, but the primary endpoint was particularly in patients with PD-L1 positive tumors using the cutoff of combined positivity score of 5 or greater. And so for that population, the benchmark overall survival in the combination arm of chemotherapy plus nivolumab was 14.4 months, which is really, truly transformative and clinically and statistically significant, with a hazard ratio of 0.71. So for the first time in a long time, we were able to demonstrate a meaningful separation in survival curves with the difference of over 3 months, which has not been seen in our disease in many years. And then that's what led to the FDA approval. What's important also to note, in all randomized patients, the median overall survival was also improved, with median overall survival of 13.8 months in a combination arm with a hazard ratio of 0.8, suggesting that patients with high PD-L1 status are still the ones that probably derive the deepest benefit and the most dramatic benefit. But there are some population of patients, perhaps where PD-L1 status was inconclusive, or there's some heterogeneity of disease that still benefit. And based on that, PD-L1 mandate for PD-L1 positivity was not included in FDA level. But I think it is still important to test your patients for PD-L1 status in first-line setting to understand where they will fall in on this spectrum. Again, the field is evolving at such a rapid pace that, again, just within a few weeks, pembrolizumab approval was actually reversed in third-line setting. And so for PD-L1 CPS1 population. So again, it becomes even more critical to consider using immune checkpoint inhibitor in first-line setting for these patients, because you may not have access to it later. One more point about efficacy, and then we'll move on to safety. What's also critical beyond PD-L1 is to know your patient's MSI status, and it becomes less urgent because immunotherapy is now available for all patients in first-line setting. But one of the most striking hazard ratios in this subgroup analysis that was presented is the overall survival for MSI-high patients. That hazard ratio of 0.33 is really suggesting that you can potentially harm your patients if you don't offer immunotherapy in first-line setting. And that's an important data point to really highlight and bring home. Immunotherapy, it works in MSI-high patients.
In terms of safety, was anything unexpected observed with the combination, or did nivolumab and chemotherapy act as anticipated?
In terms of treatment adverse events, this is an important factor, and particularly since we're giving patients chemotherapy, we're giving patients immunotherapy in combination, and some of these patients can be quite frail. And even in a phase 3 setting, where these patients potentially are carefully monitored and followed, the rate of grade 3 or 4 events certainly was higher in the combination arm as expected. It was 59% with combination of nivolumab and chemotherapy versus 44%. Most of these toxicities are reversible with close monitoring, dose reduction, interruptions. The immune-related events that are associated with this regimen, and this is exactly on par and not unexpected, a very expected rate of events and immune-related events profile, include endocrinopathies, so alterations in the thyroid function tests, which need to be monitored. Patients may present with adrenal insufficiency that's subclinical, and so that's why it's important to be aware of those findings. Certainly GI toxicity, elevation in in AST and ALT, so the liver function tests, hepatic alterations, such as bilirubin elevation, all of those side effects need to be considered. For GI toxicity, diarrhea is one of the side effects that we monitor for, and may be important to differentiate between whether or not it's 5-FU related or nivolumab related. And typically the 5-FU related toxicity is much easier managed and is not as persistent. And so if there's any concern for colitis related to nivolumab on imaging or clinically, certainly immunotherapy needs to be interrupted. Other side effects that we see is rash, and this is usually self-limiting and is resolved with topical steroids, so not something that you would need to change or stop treatment for. And also kidney toxicity for acute interstitial nephritis, which can be quite important to monitor for and to stop therapy. So the rule of thumb is that endocrinopathies, skin-related toxicities, we typically treat through, but any other major GI toxicities or liver function test abnormalities or renal toxicity, we interrupt nivolumab.
Now that it's approved, how do you foresee the nivolumab and chemotherapy combination fitting into the paradigm?
That's a great question, and it's a historic year for our upper GI patients. Many exciting trials read out and approvals, one after the other through the FDA. We're keeping the regulatory authorities busy and the investigators as well, because all of these trials and the standard of care has been shifted several times now. And the challenge remains is, are we doing a good enough job at managing this disease and curing patients? And the short answer is absolutely not. This is just the beginning and the best is yet to come. You know, I think for your standard patient in practice, this is an easy regimen to give with FOLFOX plus nivolumab. Oncologists are accustomed to the giving FOLFOX, and nivolumab lends itself very well for combination. And that's why we designed the study as such. We wanted to make it very user-friendly as opposed to the three-drug regimen and cisplatin use, which is less user-friendly and more toxic to patients. But would you treat every single patient in clinic with this regimen? You know, I think my clinic is unique where patients are fitter, they're much more motivated. So if there's an opportunity to enroll someone in a clinical trial, we may consider that. Certainly, if you have a very frail patient where toxicity is a risk, especially with dual, with combination therapy, and you think the benefit may be low because the tumor has very low PD-L1 expression or zero, and you're certain that it's good sample and you can be certain about the treatment and the reliability of PD-L1 status, in those patients, you may decide not to do combination. But majority of our patients will receive FOLFOX nivolumab in first-line setting, or at least an immune checkpoint inhibitor in first-line setting in combination with chemotherapy. As I said, because unlike, for example, Asia, where nivolumab still has approval in third-line setting, in the U.S., we don't have immunotherapy now in third-line setting approved. And so if your patients won't receive it in first-line, they may not have access to it outside of a clinical trial otherwise.
What's next for this regimen? And are there other regimens in the GI cancer space that could move into the frontline treatment landscape?
Absolutely. Well, you know, we're already doing a lot of work to build on this. And there's a lot of excitement about the synergy that we see with certain targeted agents that target the tumor biology and microenvironment. So they're not necessarily immune checkpoint inhibitors, but they augment the immune response and further allow the immune checkpoint inhibitors expand the T-cell population that's tumor-directed. So that's where a lot of the future lies. The problem with some of these combination strategies is obviously the more agents you add, the more toxicity, right? And so, that's going to be the next big hurdle to overcome. How do we actually start curing patients outside of MSI population with these combinations? It's been years since the last FDA approval in first line. I'm hoping that the next one will come quicker, but realistically, this disease is challenging. Patients can be quite sick, and CheckMate 649 data suggests that even in the clinical trials and academic settings, very few patients still get second and third line treatment outside of Asia, in the U.S. and so certain other centers. So that's what we need to improve on. I think CheckMate 649 data is certainly practice changing and will set the standard for a future to come. The next frontier will be to build on that. How long will it take us to actually improve on CheckMate 649? It's to be determined. And certainly the lower hanging fruit is to keep our patients well and healthy so that they are able to get second and third line therapy and live longer as a result.
Is there anything else that you would like to add regarding this combination?
It's important to highlight that on the trial, we typically continued a maintenance 5-FU and nivolumab. And so I think that's still the standard in most centers, is to dose reduce oxaliplatin and discontinue it if there's cumulative toxicity, but try to continue maintenance therapy as it appears to be beneficial, especially for patients who are tolerating the treatment. The question remains is how long is enough? On the trial, we typically stopped after 2 years, and that's has become somewhat of an industry standard for other clinical trials. We don't know if that's the right answer, but it seems to be that at least you need to continue maintenance therapy and not stop altogether after you receive maximum response.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive on Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science summits and institutional perspectives in cancer webinars. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and at OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive on Air.